Tonight evening, May 6th, it's Lag BaOmer, and we're continuing with creation in the beginning. And we are going to start tonight on page 74 and 75. Wait, is that right? Hold on. Sorry, my mistake. Page 72 and 73. And we will at least begin the discussion of the Bris Milah, the circumcision of Abraham. And in conjunction with that, we have the name changes of Avram to Abraham and Sarai to Sarah. We talked about last week Yishmael's birth and Hagar's the episode with Hagar and Sarah. And Yishmael was born when Abraham was 86 years old. Now we know that Yitzchak is going to be born when Abraham is 100 years old, which puts Yishmael at 14 years older than Yitzchak. The year before Yitzchak is born is when Abraham has his Bris Milah, which means that Yishmael, Abraham is 99, and Yishmael is 13. Hence the custom of the Arabs that a bris is performed at the age of 13. Because that is when Yishmael had his bris. So, let's read the first few verses in chapter Yud Zayin 17. And let's get a sense of what's going on over here. Vayyeh Avram ben Tishim Shana v'Teisha Shanim. Avram was 99 years old. Vayirah Hashem el Avram, and Hashem appeared to Avram. Vayomer Elav, and he said to him, Ani Kel Shakai, I am God. How do they translate Shakai?
They don't.
Okay. Fine. Go before me and be pure, be perfect. Okay. V'etnav risi b'ini v'necha, I'll place my covenant between me and between you. And I will increase you very, very much. Avram fell on his face, and God spoke to him, saying, Ani hinev risi itach, behold, my bris is with you. You will be a father of many nations. Your name will no longer be Avram. Your name will be Avraham, with an extra hey, for I have made you the father of many nations. Avram comes from a contraction of Av, which means father, and Ram means Aram, the father of the Aram, of the area of the Aramean area. Avraham is Av Hamon Goyim. That's the letters spell out Av, and then the Hamem is Hamon, many, the father of many. I will make you fruitful very much. I'll make you many nations, and kings will come from you. And I will establish my covenant between me and between you, and between your generations after you, in your children after you for their generations, for a covenant forever, to be for you as a God, and to your children after you. And I will give to you and to your children after you the land of your sojourning. Eis kalaretz Canaan, all the land of Canaan, lachuzas salam, for an inheritance forever. And I will be for them as a God. And God said to Abraham, V'atah precedes Yishmor, and you, my covenant, you shall guard. Atav zarachacharachal darasam, you and your children after you for their generations. Now, until this point, Hashem has said nothing about a bris milah, about a circumcision. He's mentioned the word covenant several times. He changed Avram's name to Avraham, but nothing about a circumcision. And now he mentions it. Zos brisi asher tishmeru, this is my covenant that you shall guard, b'ini u'b'inichem u'b'in zaracha acharecha, between me and between you, and between your children after you, himol lachem kol zachar, circumcised for you all males. You shall circumcise the flesh. This shall be the sign of the covenant between me and between you. And then it goes on to say, 8 days old is when the child gets the bris. Who gets the bris? Children in the household, including slaves, get a bris. what happens if a person doesn't have a bris, doesn't deliberately, does not become circumcised, then they are cut off from the nation, etc. At the end of the paragraph, moving on to Pasuk Tes Vav, 15, Vayomer Elokim El Avraham, and God said to Avraham, Sarai Ishtecha, Sarai, your wife, Lo Sikra Es Shema Sarai, you shall not call her name Sarai, Ki Sarah Shema, for her name is not Sarai, but rather Sarah. Sarai means my princess. Sarah means princess of everybody, not mine. In other words, not personally for just Avraham, but rather for all. When I say the word princess, I don't mean the daughter of the king. I mean the female leader. Srara is the Jewish word for leadership, for a position of power. Sarah or Sarai would be the female equivalent, either my own or everybody's. And so by changing her name from Sarai to Sarah, it's expanding her area of control, of leadership. It goes from being personal to being the whole world. Just as Avram goes from being Avram, which is personal just to his nation, to Avraham, which becomes everybody. Hamon going in many nations. And then he goes on to say that I'll give you a child from her. And Pasuk Yud Zayin 17, Vayipol Avraham al panav vayitzchak. Avraham fell on his face and he laughed. Vayomer b'livon, he said in his heart, Halaven me'a shana yivalev, can someone who's 100 years old give birth? A man who's 100 years old produce a child? Vim Sarah havat tishim shana teleidam, will Sarah, who's 90 years old, will she be able to give birth? Vayomer Avraham el halalokim, lu yishmal yichel afanecha, won't Yishmael live before you? How do they say it? Oh, that Yishmael might live before you. In truth, Sarah, your wife, will give birth for you a son. You shall name his name Yitzchak. And I will establish my covenant with him, for a covenant forever and for his children after him. But to Yishmael I have listened to you. Behold, I have blessed him, and I have multiplied him and increased him very much. He shall have 12 leaders, 12 princes. I shall make him a very great nation. But I will establish my covenant with Yitzchak, and that Sarah will have for you next year. He finishes speaking to him, and then Avram goes and listens to Hashem, and he performs the bris milah, the circumcision, on himself, on Yishmael, and all of the males of the household, which means including the slaves. And that is the end of the episode of the bris. Now, there is this commandment about a bris milah, about a covenant between us and Hashem, which is manifest in the circumcision, is a commandment that was given to Abraham, which goes down from generation to generation, and something that Jews have always done. The Gemara tells us that a mitzvah, a commandment, that was accepted by the Jews with simcha, with joy, we still do with joy. If it was accepted with joy in the first place, then it continues on, and the Jewish people, it's embedded within us that we will do it with joy. Bris Milah was accepted with joy, and it is something that is done today. It is a joyous occasion. It is something which virtually spans all areas of Judaism. For people who stray from traditional Judaism, it is one of the last things to go. Along with Yom Kippur and the Pesach Seder and Hanukkah candles, Bris Milah is one of those things that sticks. It's something that generally is adhered to until someone is really completely away from everything.
It says about the bris milah,
I am joyous on your words, like someone who has found a great fortune, a great wealth. That's so it is appropriate to do a Suda Smitzvah, to have a meal, a festive meal with a bris milah.
How would Hashem know exactly what to do?
That's a good question. So for that you need the Talmud. See, these verses here have many nuances, and with each letter and each word and each wording, different things are derived. And so different things are understood from the Pesukim. But yeah, it's not just from the written word, it's also from the oral law, the Torah Shebaal Peh, that we understand it.
And Abraham performed his own bris milah.
Correct. Correct. He performed his own bris milah. But this commandment, in addition to, you have a lot of print over here. It started with, at the beginning of the chapter, and it goes on for 27 verses. That's a lot of verses for one commandment. You don't find that many commandments that have so many verses attached to them. But if you go through the psukim carefully, you see that most, even though there are some verses that concern themselves with the laws of circumcision, 8 days old, what happens if you don't do it, who should do it, etc., the details, but most of what is going on over here are not related to the laws of circumcision. What are they about? So there are a lot of sidebars of minor plots that are going on along with the commandments for bris milah. They are the name changes, which in fact, as I pointed out, that's how the chapter starts. It starts with the name change. It's only after the name change that bris milah is mentioned. That's A. In fact, it's funny, because first Avram's name is changed, then you have the whole business of bris milah, and then Sarah's name is changed. Kind of bookended, the name changing bookends the whole thing. And you have much mention of the land of Eretz Yisrael, the land of Israel. That Hashem says that I will have this bris with you. And then in verse 8, and I'll give you the land of your sojourning. It goes hand in hand. The land goes together. Many of the commentaries point out that the land of Eretz Yisrael is dependent on the mitzvah of bris milah. Bris milah is very special because the land is linked to bris milah. Now, we have several questions which we need to address, and in answering those questions, it will broaden our understanding of what is going on over here, as we do in every week. By understanding the answers to the questions that are obvious, then we will have a better appreciation of the whole thing.
When you said last week that Abraham was very concerned, he wanted reassurance as context from his baruch that the land would be given to him. Yeah, Hashem was giving him that reassurance, but you say it's linked with the bris.
Well, Abraham asked for a sign for the land. Remember, he had two promises God gave him, a child and a land. Oh, by the way, I forgot to mention, the other thing that's linked to the bris is having a child from Sarah. Now remember, Abraham had a child already. He had a child from Hagar. He had Yishmael. But that he will have a child from Sarah is linked to the bris. Hashem promised Abraham two things. Two things, as we mentioned a couple of weeks ago, two things that meant everything to Abraham. Because Abraham knew that his purpose in this world was to create a legacy, the legacy of serving Hashem, of being an Eved Hashem, monotheism, and being dedicated to Hashem, being the center of history. And he understood that in order to properly do that, he needed two things. He needed offspring, A, and B, he needed the land of Israel, Eretz Yisrael. Because that's the land, as we've spoken about before, that one is can be closest to Hashem. It is the land that is linked most closely with spirituality. Hashem promised him both as a result of what he was doing. Abraham trusted in Hashem for the child, but said, I want a sign for the land. And as a response to that, what did Hashem do? We talked about it a few weeks ago. The bris ben abasar, the covenant between the halves. The, let's emphasize the word, bris ben abasarim. The covenant between the halves. What do we have here tonight? The bris milah, the covenant. Hashem has already made a covenant with Abraham about the land. And Abraham didn't ask for a sign about the child. Yet over here, Hashem has brought about a new bris without any prodding from Abraham. He didn't ask for it. About both things, the land and the child. why the need for another bris? We have a bris, the covenant between the halves, the bris man have a son. Why a new bris? And Abraham didn't ask for it. The first bris was as a result of Abraham's asking, give me a sign. So they had a sign, they had a bris. This isn't out of any request. Why have it? And without being asked. And also, why is this one about both points, both about the child and the land, when before there was only a bris about the land, not about the child? And how do we understand the name changes being linked to it?
The bris is, it was realized for Abraham and the Jewish people. The bris for the land was something else. There was the bris himself and the bris milah.
They're very different. But in the bris milah, it also says that the land is linked to this bris milah. Our sages tell us that the change from Avram to Avraham was significant in the numerical value, in the gematria of the word as well. See, Avram, the numerical value is 243. Avraham is 248. When you add the extra 5 of the letter He, you get 248. What is the significance of 248? So the Gemara tells us that 248 equals, anybody know? Okay, it says the Eivarim Shebaguf, which means the limbs of the body, which might mean the bones. Might mean the bones of the body, which is also the positive mitzvahs, the commandments. We know that there are 365 prohibitions, lavin, and 248 commandments, mitzvahs aseh. The 365 lavin, the prohibitions, correspond to the days of the year, another prohibition to each day of the year, and the 248 commandments, the mitzvahs aseh, correspond to the limbs of the body. There are also, not coincidentally, 248 words in, who knows?
In the Shema.
And our sages tell us that each word of Shema, when pronounced properly, corresponds to another limb of the body. That it, so to speak, it rectifies that limb. It's misaking that limb. Meaning that there's a spiritual component to every limb of the body. We are physical, we are also spiritual. The spiritual part of ourselves, we address it with each word of the Kriya Shema. Our sages tell us, Chazal say, that Avraham, he at this point is 99 years old. 99 years of working to serve Hashem properly. He has grown, and he's constantly growing. And he has perfected himself. And perfected himself. He has reached a level of perfection that is nearly perfect, but not quite. Not quite. He has achieved full and complete control over 243 limbs of the body. 243 limbs. Now, what do I mean by complete control? Abraham was in far better control of himself than we are. Believe me, Abraham never lost his temper. Believe me, Abraham never did anything impulsively, and certainly was not a slave to his own desires. Abraham was a giant. But what it means is, well, let me give you an example. The two of the ones he did not have control over yet were his eyes. What does it mean, his eyes? Well, once he got control over his eyes, Chazal tell us an incredible thing, that Avraham was in such control that it transcended the physical world to the point where if he would be looking in a particular direction and there would be an improper thing to look at in that direction, he wouldn't see it. He physically wouldn't see it. His eyes would not process the improper thing. That's the level of perfection that he reached because of his zehirus. He's being so careful in serving Hashem, the eyes refused to process the improper sight, the improper vision. That's how far it went.
I wanted to ask you, why do we hear about the land before we hear about the bread?
Okay, so let's think this one. We're going to get to that. Hold the thought. And when he was 99 years old, he wasn't quite there with his eyes yet. He had control over 243 limbs, not 248. Which five were lacking? The two eyes, the two ears, and the area of the body where the bris milah is performed. Those are the five limbs that he had not yet had full control over. But you understand what I mean by full control. Believe me, his control was far better than anybody else's control that we can think of. But the control where it transcends the physical world, where his ears don't even hear. If you tried to whisper Lashon Hara in Avraham's ears, he wouldn't hear it. It wouldn't go through. The eardrum wouldn't pick it up. After the bris milah, after the name change. The name change, by doing so, Hashem gave him control over these five limbs. That now he had full control over them. These five now became under his complete shlita, his complete dominion. Moreover, Hashem said to Avraham, you have seen in the stars, you've seen that if you read the stars, they say that Avram cannot have a child and Sarah cannot have a child. That Avram and Sarah together cannot have children. That's what you have seen. Now, let's digress for a moment. Stargazing, astrology. Astrology, is it real? Is it fake? What is it? Well, astrology is fake. Meaning that anybody who claims to do astrology today is a con artist. There's no such thing as anybody who understands how to read the stars today. What's that?
Today.
Is there such a thing as astrology that we Jews believe in? Yes, absolutely. There is astrology. The stars do have the power to tell us the future. And there's such a thing, as I've spoken about this before, as mazel. Mazel means constellation. Mazel tov, which we say at a simcha, means good constellation. That is what you are saying when you wish a person mazel tov. You are saying, wow, you've had a good constellation. I hope it continues. That's what you're saying. I hope your astrology continues to go well. That's what you're wishing the person. Because we believe in it. We don't believe anybody knows today how to read it. But we do believe that in previous generations, they did know. The Egyptians knew how to read it. The Jews knew how to read it. And the Greeks might have known how to read it. Earlier generations knew how to read it. The art has been lost. But we do believe that there are, when Hashem created the world, He embedded in the stars the future of the world. The Gemara tells us, the Talmud tells us, Ein mazel l'Yisrael. There is no constellation for the Jews. There's no constellation for the Jews. Then why do we say mazel tov? What does that mean? So our sages explain, it doesn't mean that we're not subject to astrology. We are. But Jews, unlike anybody else in the world, have the power to rise above the stars. We, unlike anybody else, can transcend the physical laws of the universe, which include the stars. Astrology is a physical law. See, science doesn't recognize it as a science because they don't believe that there's anything up there that can affect down here. But we believe it's a physical law, just like the law of gravity. There is something in the stars that Hashem has set in motion that tells us the future. But Jews, even though we are born into it, we are subject to it, we can rise above it through davening, which is the most potent way of getting around it, and through our own acts of righteousness, we can rise above the stars. We can transcend mazel. Hashem told Avram, you were born Avram, and Sarah was born Sarai. Avram and Sarai cannot have children together. Avraham and Sarah can have children together. If I change your name, you will then rise above your mazel. You will transcend your mazel, and you will be able to have children together.
Is that only somebody sick and they add a name?
That is why they do that. That is why they do that.
Change the mazel?
Yeah, that is what they do. They're attempting to do that. It doesn't always work. Here Hashem is saying that that's the case. But notice how Hashem changes Avram's name. He doesn't say to Avram, you know what? Avram can't have children, so I'm going to change your name to Pransky. That he doesn't say, right? He changes his name to Avraham. Why? Because it's more than just changing the names. It's adding those extra five, numbers, the extra hey, to give him total control over his entire body. By giving him the rest of the perfection that he so desperately craved, through his davening and his working towards it, he's wanted this for so long, now he has the merit of chus to transcend mazel, and now he and Sarah can have a child together. And the same applies to Sarah. Sarai, she can't have children. Sarah can, with Avraham. What type of child? What type of child are they going to have? Well, if they have to transcend their mazel to have the child, and if they have to reach an extra level of perfection in order to have that child, you can imagine this child is no ordinary child. We're talking about a super special child. And let me say it a little bit more sharply. We all descend from that child. Even if a person is a ger, once a person is a ger, they become part of the nation. So we descend from that child, from that Yitzchak. According to the laws of nature, Yitzchak couldn't exist. He couldn't be born because the stars dictated it couldn't happen. But then, because of who Avraham and Sarah were, they rose above nature. They rose beyond mazel. And then Yitzchak was born. It is no less a miracle than any other miracle. You don't see it as a miracle because there was no splitting of the sea or anything like that, although you do have a 90-year-old and a 100-year-old giving birth, so that's pretty miraculous. But the real miracle was rising above the mazel.
Can I ask you something? When a child, you can have a child, they say, of three partners, it's a mother, father, and a Kadosh Baruch Hu. But look at the letter. You're talking about hay. You know, part of Hashem's name is the yud and the hay.
Mm-hmm.
So is that also part of it, that the partner, because they got hay from Hashem's name, from yud hay, it was a partnership.
And they talk about this hay, and the two hays together are yud, mm-hmm. right? 5 and 5 is 10. So they do talk about that. But we all descend from that miracle. Jews shouldn't exist. Not one of us should exist. If you say that if a Jew buys in to the notion that there is no God, that everything is nature, that everything follows a course of nature and there is no deviation from nature, they are not only denying the existence of God, they're denying their own existence. Egyptians would exist anyway. Babylonians would exist anyway. Romans would exist anyway. But we can't exist. Romans, I don't know, because they're descendants from Esau. But we can't exist. We exist through a miracle, through a deviation of nature. Right. We'll get to Esau when we get to Yitzchak, because Esau really could have been.
Look at our history. There is a miracle.
And that happened. It recurs over and over and over again. All the time, we should cease to exist, and we don't. How could it be? The answer is, Hitler can't destroy us, because Hitler is physical, and Hitler lives in a physical world, and he deals with everything physical. He doesn't believe in God. So he can't destroy us, because we are beyond that. We only exist through an act of God. And nothing that is physical can destroy us. Perhaps, unfortunately, and God forbid, he can hurt us, but can't destroy us. All this is linked to the Bris Milah. You see, in answer to the question of why another covenant, the first covenant was a response to Abraham's request. He says, God, give me a sign. So Hashem gave him a covenant. This is many years later. Abraham was, by some counts, only 70 years old at the time of the Bris Bein HaBesharim, at the time of the covenant. This is 29 years later. God told him, you'll have a child. God told him, you'll have the land. It's 29 years later. Where is that happening? Yes, he had Yishmael, but not from Sarah. And Yishmael, as we discussed last week, was a failed attempt. It was supposed to be better than he was, and it ended up not being what it was supposed to be. Clearly, he's not the legacy Abraham's going to leave. So it's 29 years. Do we see Abraham questioning God? Do we see him saying, God, what's going on? I thought you told me I was going to have a child with Sarah. I thought you told me I'm going to have a legacy. I thought I'm going to have the land. Abraham does not question. Abraham does not doubt. Hashem said it's going to happen. So it's going to happen. It's been 29 years. Fine. So it'll be 39 years. So it'll be 49 years. It's going to happen because Hashem said so. Abraham, he doesn't flinch. He doesn't question. Later on, interestingly enough, in Parshas Va'era, when Moshe Rabbeinu, after he is charged with the mission of getting the Jews out, and he goes before Paro for the first time, let my people go. And how does Paro respond? Obviously he says no. But what else does he say? Who's God? And what else does he do? More than that. He says, more than that. He says, you're making the Jews lazy. You know what? Not only am I not going to let them go, I'm going to take away the straw. Now they're really going to work. And as a result, the Jewish kapos, who were the shotrim, who were tzaddikim, they were righteous, and would not beat their fellow Jews, they got beaten because they wouldn't beat the Jews to make them work harder. So Moshe goes before Hashem. He says, Hashem, why'd you send me? Why'd you do that? You sent me so they should get beaten up? That's why you sent me? And so Moshe says to Hashem. And Hashem says to Moshe in the beginning of Parshas Va'era, according to the way the sages read the verses, Hashem says to Moshe, "Ay, where are the patriarchs and matriarchs? Where are the avos? You know, where are the good old days? Abram went till he was 99 years old, till he was 100 years old. He never questioned me. And here, I send you on one mission, and you're already questioning me." That's what Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu. Yitzhak, he had trouble. Yaakov, they never questioned me. And you, one time, boom, you questioned me. Now, you understand, and when we get to Moshe Rabbeinu, we'll talk about this. Obviously, Moshe is the greatest to ever live, so any flaw we're going to find has to be understood. You understand that Moshe is questioning God, not on his own account, but on the account of his fellow Jews who are being beaten. Moshe had an intense love for his fellow Jews. Nobody loves the Jews more than Moshe Rabbeinu, as we will see when we learn about Moshe. How he risked his life, he stuck his neck out for us many times. And we will see that we owe our existence, our continued existence, because of Moshe. So there is a difference over here. Abraham is about himself. Moshe is about the fellow Jews. But nevertheless, there is that statement that Hashem makes. The good old days, the Avos, they never questioned me. Because Abraham didn't. He's 99 years old. Hashem appears to him, and he says to him, now you're going to have that child, and now you're going to get the land. But there needs to be one more thing, one more step. Not because you asked for a sign, not because you're questioning me, but because you have to understand that the legacy that you're going to leave is not a physical legacy. And the people that are going to come from you, that are going to be the center of history, that are going to be my people, are not a physical people. They have to transcend the physical world. Both their being born and their getting the land, both things are not going to work according to the laws of nature. Both things, the continuing of the Jewish people, and the Jewish people inhabiting the land of Israel, neither of those points will happen on a physical level that follows the laws of nature. They will both require exceeding the laws of nature, transcending the laws of nature. And you know how we're going to bring that out? With the Bris Milah, with the circumcision. The Bris Milah is going to be your sign between me and you that the Jews transcend the physical world. That having the land of Israel transcends the physical world. It's going to be our special covenant that says the Jews are different. You're going to put a sign in your body that is going to show that you are different.
Now I understand. So before they left Egypt's shrine, they had to have a bracelet. And then before they entered
Exnan,
Yeshua would come out.
That is correct.
And even Moshe, when the Medrash says that, I think Mary told him to the bracelet real quick because the Medrash says you can just follow it up by snake or something.
Right. There has to be a bris in order to have a covenant with Hashem, in order to be that people. Now why? Why a bris? Why in that way? Why a bris milah? The bris is done, it is a statement that the physical body is imperfect. That we cut away at the physical body. Those who are against circumcision, what do they say? They say, what are you doing? It's barbaric.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And from an objective standpoint, it may seem to be barbaric. But that doesn't faze us, because we're not doing it because we think it's a humane thing to do. We're not doing it for health reasons, if there are any health reasons. That's not why we're doing it. We're doing it because God said, this is my covenant between me and you. And you're going to carry this on your bodies. And it's going to be, that's going to be who you are. You're going to do it to a little baby, because the self-sacrifice is going to be the self-sacrifice of the parents. When the parents bring the child into the world and they say, we are now going to continue the legacy of the Jewish people, the first thing they're going to do when the child is old enough, 8 days, is they're going to make this statement. The child, as are the Jewish people, is a miracle. We continue through a miracle. And we are only here through that miracle. But it's more than that. It goes beyond that. Hashem is telling us throughout, he's telling Abraham and telling us through Abraham that if we want to deserve to be his people, if we want to continue to earn that name and earn that right to be the center of history, to be the chosen people, we must remember what it's all about. The covenant, the bris, says that we are who we are not because we were given some promotion and now we can go enjoy ourselves on the beach. We are who we are because of our self-sacrifice for Hashem. Because of our ancestors' self-sacrifice for Hashem. But we need to continue that self-sacrifice. And we show it with the bris, the self-sacrifice, that we do what Hashem tells us to do. And that's why we are who we are. That's why we continue to survive, and that's ultimately why we deserve the land of Israel.
I'm not sure how to make it come out right, but we're Jewish through a Jewish mother.
Correct.
But no...
There's no bris milah on a woman.
Thank God.
That's what you're asking.
But there's no, other than giving a name... There was no need for anything.
No. So what? How do we understand that? Why is it? Why is the sign? Meaning, what I mean to say is this: Hashem picked a particular sign, a particular covenant. Why did it have to be a covenant which is specific to men? After all, it's a covenant for the entire people. This is who we are. This is the Jewish people. It's a covenant for the Jewish people. So why? Only with the men of the Jewish people, not with the women of the Jewish people. I'm not asking that there should be a circumcision of women, but have a different sort of sign which could apply to both. God is God. He can do whatever he wants, and he can create the human body however he wants in a way that could fit both genders.
It has to do with the seed then, which is an altar?
Okay, well, but still, why only one gender? But the answer is because the bris is ultimately linked to Avraham becoming in full control of his entire body. And since, even though both genders are subject to physical desire, but the male gender is more linked two physical desires in the female gender, and the bris, mila, is linked to that. Now, the part of having the bris on an eight-day-old child is because that brings the mother into the self-sacrifice. A mother has to give up her baby, her eight-day-old infant, for a procedure that is going to cause pain. That's part of the self-sacrifice of a bris mila. The parents, but it's harder for a mother than it is for a father, have to give up the child for that procedure. Now, it's not a fatal procedure, God forbid, that's not what it is, but it is a painful procedure, and a mother has to accept it. So the self-sacrifice is on both genders, but it's actually performed on the man. You see, the boy, the eight-year-old boy, he doesn't remember it. We don't even know exactly what he's feeling at the time. So it's not a self-sacrifice for him. He has no choice anyway. The self-sacrifice is on the parents. Now, it's true if a boy does not have a bris mila and he gets older, he needs to perform a bris mila no matter how old he is, and then, of course, it is a self-sacrifice for the man. But the way the system is supposed to work, it is the parents, both mother and father, who are giving up in order to have this happen.
After Sarah died, Abraham had wife, her other again. So after circumcision, he had new children.
Right.
So what is the position of these children?
Yeah, so that is a very good question.
They also have the bris mila.
Okay, that is a very, very good question. They are called B'nai Keturah, the children of Keturah, who was the second wife that he took. Some say Keturah is Hagar. And we'll talk about Keturah when we get to her.
Yes,
that's right.
Exactly. Yeah. So are the Jewish people
So it seems that most of the commentaries agree that they also had to have a bris mila because they were his children, but not their children. Meaning it was one generation, and that's it. You see, the commandment continues all the way down. Because the way the Talmud understands the verse is, the child that will come from Sarah, that child, the bris continues all the way down to us today. But the children that come from other wives, don't necessarily have the mitzvah continue on down. So, yeah.
Am I remembering correctly that there were a few men in the past who were born circumcised?
Yes.
And they're considered special?
Yes. Right. Moshe was born circumcised. Shem was born circumcised. And that is considered to be a very special thing if a child is born circumcised. It rarely happens, but it could happen. The tribe, Gad, was born circumcised. It's considered to be a very special thing for a child to be born circumcised. It's the symbolism would be that child is already on a certain level of perfection. You see, what the circumcision says is that we are here to perfect ourselves, that we're born into this world with a job, with a mission. We weren't born in this world to simply enjoy ourselves, have a good time, avoid pain and pursue pleasure, which is basically the philosophy of most people in the world. Pursue pleasure, avoid pain. That is not the Jewish ideal. The Jewish ideal is pursue God. Avoid anything that takes us away from God. Now, Hashem, in his benevolence, has made pursuing him very often a pleasurable experience. Shabbos, we all know, to be a pleasurable experience. But there are parts of serving God which is not pleasurable. Yom Kippur is not generally a pleasurable experience. I don't know about you. For me, it's not necessarily a pleasurable experience. And a bris is not a pleasurable experience. Nevertheless, we are here to pursue God. And we show that with the bris. That any time we move on in generations, we are now showing that we are here to do what it takes. We're here to carry on that legacy. We are prepared for the challenge. We're here to do whatever God tells us to do. That's the bris. And that's what Hashem is telling Abraham over here. And it's linked both to children and the land. You see, because let's just develop this a little bit further. The land of Israel, us being in the land of Israel, is not a physical thing. It is not something that follows the laws of nature. Jews in the land of Israel is a miraculous thing. It is not by coincidence, even today, that the Jews, that the state of Israel existing through all kinds of incredible miracles, starting with 48, and then with each war, where we should have been wiped out every single time. And nevertheless, we endure, we continue. That's not by a law of nature. That does not follow the laws of modern warfare. I don't know if this is a true story. However, a friend of mine told me that they were once taking a class in one of the universities in Baltimore. They were once taking a class, and it was a class involving something about the science of war. And they discussed, they used as examples, they used various wars throughout history and showed how they worked. So somebody asked, why don't we use any of the more recent wars in the Middle East as examples? And allegedly the professor said that we can't use those examples because they don't follow the rules. There's nothing we can draw from there because they don't follow the rules. We can't understand how they work, and therefore we can't use them as examples. I don't know if it's a true story or not.
39 guys. Unfortunately, one person.
That's right. That's right. Hey, you don't need any more than that. You don't need any more than that. I don't know that the story is true, but the sentiment is true. That's for sure. The fact is true. And so us being in the land of Israel, that's even today when you don't see miracles today. You don't see open miracles. But certainly in the time when Yehoshua and Joshua led the people in, that was all miraculous. The walls of Jericho, etc. It was all miraculous. Being in the land of Israel is in itself a miraculous thing, and the Bris Milah is linked to that as well. Hashem is saying, if you Jews continue the legacy of understanding that you're here for a mission, and you're here to rise above the physical world, to serve me, to be the example of serving me, then you will endure, and then you will be in the land. But if, God forbid, we forget our mission, and this is clearly stated throughout the Chumash, if we forget our mission, what's the first thing that happens? We get kicked off the land. Exile. We don't get destroyed, because God made clear the Jews aren't going anywhere. We exist forever. But the first thing we lose is the land. We get kicked off the land. So this is what the Bris is meant to be about. Avraham does the Bris. It is a self-sacrifice because of his age. It is a self-sacrifice because of the danger. Avraham had enemies. There were people who would have loved to take advantage of Avraham's vulnerability. When he gave himself a bris, and every male in his household, who's going to protect the house? Remember, there's no police force. Who protected the house? The menfolk were the guards. They're the ones who protected the home. Every man, what happened to Shechem later on? When Shimon and Levi, when they want to destroy the city, they get all the men to have a bris milah. Oh, now they're all vulnerable. Forget it. What about the city? Avram and all the menfolk are totally incapacitated. But Avram does it because Hashem said so. And it doesn't matter. I'll do what Hashem said. And I'll be protected because Hashem will protect me. So this is the backdrop of the bris milah. When we continue next week, I'm trying to think, yes, next week we should be able to continue. Next week when we continue, we are going to move in now to Parshas Vayera. Parshas Vayera begins with the story of the three angels, or the three Arabs, or whoever it is, visiting Avraham. So we are going to begin with that, and from there we move into the whole story with Sodom and Yitzchak's birth as well. And we have some very, very interesting things to talk about over there. And how many more weeks until Shavuos? We have 33, so there's 44. So two more Sundays. Okay, I'm going to try to get to it. There's something in Parshas Vayera which ties in. Well, it ties into Megillas Rus, to the book of Ruth. So we'll see when that happens. I do want to also mention, let me set this up.